Hi, this is Smriti Kirvanandan, your host for Health Forward Podcast. One of the most important things you can do for yourself is to take care of your health. Your road to discovering an all-inclusive, empathetic, and innovative healthcare ecosystem starts right now.
Diagnostics play a critical role in healthcare. Predicting and preventing diseases early can reduce healthcare costs, reduce emotional stress, and improve precision care and medicine. The future of diagnostics lies at the intersection of good governance, innovation, social impact, and humanity. In this episode, I'm in conversation with Thierry Bernard, CEO of QIAGEN. Thierry, welcome to Health Forward. Such a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having us, and thanks for having QIAGEN. Thank you.
So what has inspired you to be in the field of health?
Oh, it's a long story. You might be disappointed because I'm not a scientist by training. And I would say I fell in healthcare and in healthcare business kind of by coincidence many years ago. But long story short, I always believe in trying to make an impact. You can try to make an impact in what you are doing. You can try to get involved in politics and improve what I call the life of the city. I tried that at a point. I have been extremely interested into the political life of my country of origin. But at a point, I just found that sometimes political decisions were taking a long time to really create an impact. And I basically started to believe that business was a good way to try to impact your environment. And inside business, I think the most impactful is probably healthcare, because you try to do well. Obviously, we are a commercial company, but still, we are taking care of critical challenges for patients all over the world. And bottom line, we want to really make improvements in life possible. And this is why I'm so fascinated and so dedicated to healthcare and in healthcare to diagnostic.
Thank you for that answer. And we're so glad to have you. Regardless of your non-scientific background, I think when there's good intent and an impact, I think it's the right mindset that's much more important. Thank you so much. The global clinical diagnostics market is expected to reach a valuation of around $126.6 billion by 2032. Where would you place the big bets?
I think more important than the number itself, I believe that the recent pandemic of COVID-19 has proven two critical things. First one is the value and the relevance of diagnostic in the healthcare value chain. As you know, compared to 3 years ago, now you speak to anybody in the street and everybody knows what a PCR test is, or what an antigen test is, or what is infectious diseases, for example. And second is, I think that the COVID-19 pandemic has also proven the superiority accuracy of molecular testing in the diagnostic value chain. So if I had to think about diagnostic of the future, I believe that the future belongs to molecular solutions, whether you are talking about PCR or digital PCR or next-generation sequencing or CRISPR. But the genomic revolution has begun, has started, and I think nothing is going to start it. Our understanding on mechanisms, host and diseases interaction, our understanding of the role of the environment on, for example, cancer, and the cancer evolution for an individual, the different mutations of tumors, all this basically is clearly due to molecular solutions. This is not going to stop. Second, I really believe that you will see more and more in the future a growing alliance between imaging and in vitro diagnostic. The combination of what you can take from images, whether it is CAD, X-rays, you name it, and diagnostic, thanks, by the way, to algorithms driven by AI, artificial intelligence, is going to become also very, very prevalent. Third, I know that we have been talking about this for long, but once again, you can see that it's becoming more and more embedded into every pharma, hospital, everyday life, is the power of precision medicine and the power of personalized medicine. We all know that you and I might be impacted by the same cancer, yet the way we are going to react to that cancer, and more importantly, the way we are going, you and I, to react to a potential treatment might be completely different. And personalized medicine is the really right way to, first of all, combine the two powers of diagnostic and therapeutics, and at the same time, being much more cost-efficient for every healthcare system in the world.
There's a lot of data that goes into all of the points you mentioned. In your experience, what are some key points one has to look at to avoid major or even minor errors to really drive that precision medicine?
It's a really deep collaboration between pharma companies and diagnostic companies. It's obviously investing into significant clinical trials, because obviously we need to make sure that we are testing numbers of patients, not only numbers, but I would say of diverse also reasons, to make sure that what we are developing really has a critical clinical and medical value. It's also trying to combine the most recent available technologies. You see, 6 years ago, basically, companion diagnostic were basically a matter of PCR technologies. And we see now the progresses of next-generation sequencing into companion diagnostic, more recently even of digital PCR into clinical diagnostic. Last but not least, I would say that up to now, oncology is really the kingdom of companion diagnostic. This needs to change. There are no reasons not to have good companion diagnostic for infectious diseases as well. And as we have seen in QIAGEN recently, when we signed an agreement with a pharma company, for example, for the Parkinson's disease, I believe that neurodegenerative diseases will become also a field for companion diagnostic as well.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for those answers, Thierry. Obviously, the diagnostics industry, including companies like QIAGEN, played a critical role in fighting the pandemic. Now, with all the corona testing having gone, how do you see the COVID-driven business pipeline shifting? And where do you see the transformation happening to? What's next?
Well, first of all, as I said before, I really hope, but obviously we need to work for that. Governments will remember the critical role that diagnostic played in that pandemic COVID-19. And I'm not seeing that with envy. I think we spoke a lot about the very rapid development of RNA vaccine, and that was a significant performance. But who remembers that the entire diagnostic industry came up with commercial tests, an efficient commercial test, PCR-based, in less than 3 months on average, with clinical trials included in a record time. Normally, it takes more than a year to develop one test. If you want to develop a full system, which is an instrument, plus a test, plus the associated bioinformatics, it takes sometimes 3 to 5 years. In 3 months, It did happen. We forget as well that during a period of time, there was absolutely no commercial test available, yet we were still providing authorities like the CDCs, like the NIH, with significant raw materials, or let's say RNA kits, for example, in the case of COVID, so that they could develop their own tests. And last but not least, companies like QIAGEN, but not only QIAGEN, we had to invest forcefully into manufacturing capacities. I mean, there is a number that is very key for QIAGEN. In some of our activities, we had to multiply our output in manufacturing by 50 in less than 6 months. It has never been seen. But you see, none of this is useful only for COVID. And I think this situation is the case for most of the, let's say, well-established diagnostic company. Obviously, some of our development were very COVID-driven, but most of this investment can be completely used for other applications. And this is why I used to say for the last 2 years that QIAGEN is extremely COVID relevant, but we will never be COVID dependent. When we develop, you see, a solution where in a single cartridge, which is the size of your iPhone, we can test in less than 1 hour for more than 20 pathogens, bacteria, various viruses, yeast. We did that including COVID, but we can do that without COVID for all the other respiratory diseases like flu, like RSV, and many others. The same technology, we can develop that for gastrointestinal issues, for example, where we developed a solution for wastewater testing for COVID. The ability to detect in a tiny amount of water the presence or no of the virus. We can implement that for many other pathogens, most recently, for example, for monkeypox. So we shouldn't think that, the power of diagnostic has been proven just because of COVID, and after COVID, there is no need for diagnostic anymore. Just let me give you another couple of examples. Unfortunately, because COVID drove so many expenses just on COVID, do you know that every member state in the WHO who pledged to double in 2 years their spending in the fight against tuberculosis, none of the states have complied with that commitment? And there was a result, not only in emerging countries, but also in countries like the US, tuberculosis is on the rise as well. 1.8 million of people are dying every year of tuberculosis. Diagnostic is needed from that, from latent TB to active TB. There are so many visits to hospitals, GPs, surgeons that have been postponed because of COVID, just because there was no capacity to welcome people during COVID. But you will see now the consequence of that. Diseases that we could not detect early enough because of COVID will now show up in many patients, whether it's oncology, neurodegenerative, metabolic issues, and so on. So clearly, I think that we proved our relevance. Governments have understood that spending in diagnostic probably helps to spend much less in drugs, antibiotics, or other therapeutic solutions. And this is what we have to leverage. And if you look at QIAGEN only, this discussion is not just about QIAGEN, but our non-COVID performance has been growing at more than double digit for now 9 quarters in a row. It proves again that we are bringing added value products to the market.
Thank you, Thierry. I love that answer, one, because you're really pushing the point on how important and critical it is to predict and stop diseases at an earlier stage, and especially for the vulnerable communities. And there's a way we can expand the quantity and the quality of the diagnostics worldwide, then we would not be, facing another pandemic or a TB or any such issues. And I can't even imagine the mental agony one has to go through in the spaces of oncology and much more. So I'm really grateful that you're here and you're doing this incredible work. And congratulations on the quarter by quarter revenue increase. Digital twin and Gen AI has been taking the front row of a healthcare and life sciences conversations. Where are you currently looking forward to implementing them in QIAGEN?
Simi, it's a very good question. We believe that AI holds a very, very critical potential for our industry. You see, for example, just to talk about ChatGPT, because everybody is speaking about it, but a transformative technology like ChatGPT or other declination of it can perfectly be used to analyze very large molecules like DNA, like proteins, like RNA, or very large numbers of molecules. We believe that AI will drive better integration of different parts of the healthcare system, for example, payers, providers, patients as well. And for us, it's very clear. We have invested in digital activities for more than 6 years now. QIAGEN is not a big, big company. It's not a small company either. It's typically what we call a mid-cap. We are 6,000 QIAGENers all over the world, and we already have more than 150 QIAGENers dedicated to digital activities and therefore AI. And so we embrace it, and we really want to become the digital life science and clinical diagnostic company. So what does it mean? We see it as a way to be more efficient towards our customers, towards clinicians, towards the patients, financially also, economically more efficient. And we want to go way beyond AI or digital activities in sales and marketing. It's a very good way, for example, to do price modeling for our finance department, for example. It's a very good way, obviously, to get better insight and knowledge of our customers. We use it to try to improve our supply chain and supply chain management. We worked with AI to improve post-market surveillance, to give customers the possibility to work with us with digital ordering, to follow remotely their order and our level of inventory when they have to reorder quickly. And we really believe that AI will drive probably a much better customer journey. Obviously, it goes with some investment also into controlling the potential challenges of AI, one of them being obviously cybersecurity. And you know that when you deal in healthcare, you deal with clinical trials. So potentially you deal, for example, with patient data. And this is extremely important to invest into cybersecurity to make sure that those data will not go in places where they shouldn't go, for example. I think it would be a battle of the past to say that might be dangerous. AI will impact healthcare, will impact diagnostic. At QIAGEN, we are currently opening and creating an AI university because we want everybody to have it embedded into their DNA. And so for us, it's a good investment, and it's an investment once again to have a more intimate, better relation with our customers.
I really like that you're driving the vision by integrating and not separating science, technology, empathy, and impact. The lack of clinical trial diversity is alarming. How do we move this needle? And most importantly, how are you implementing equity in your product creations?
So that's a very good question once again. And clinical trial diversity, first of all, is in our DNA because diversity is part of our DNA. And I can come back to that. Any kind of diversity, gender diversity, ethnicity as well, background and so on. And also because in many countries, it's already a regulation. So when you run a clinical trials, diversity, diverse representation in a given clinical trial is absolutely essential to help researchers better understand differences in health, in answers to illness based on various factors, be them ethnicity, race, gender, or age. And so if you look at the FDA in the US, for example, but many other regulatory bodies in many other geographies, they have specific requirements to make sure that the data that we are generating from patients in our clinical trial or in our studies are really representing the diversity of the region or the country we are driving these clinical trials in. There are some products, for example, if you take hepatitis C, and if you want to develop a test on hepatitis C and you want to submit it to regulatory authorities, then you will have some specific criteria to show that you are covering a diverse enough population. So the way we do that, we select different sites all over the US, for the example of the US, but it's the same in other countries, and we are sure that via that diversity of sites, we will be able to recruit a very diverse base of patients. But we need to be flexible and not dogmatic here. What I mean by this is that, I mean, the purpose or the mindset of our clinical trials is what we call all-comer study or trial for a particular disease. What do I mean by this? We do not necessarily want to forcefully select patients when there are numeric criteria, we respect them. But what we want to do in our trials is to mimic, to a certain extent, what a normal clinician will see in its or in her practice on a normal day. So if you, for example, run a trial to submit a test that is going to screen different forms of gastrointestinal diseases, as I said before, you want to make sure that you are going to recruit patients of any age, infants, older patients, of any ethnicity, for example, of different genders. If you are submitting a test on specific kind of cancers that are impacting, for example, elderly people mainly, then you would obviously recruit a very high proportion of older people in your trial. When you are working on tuberculosis in the case of QIAGEN, I mean, we always try to basically recruit different kind of conditions, smokers, non-smokers, different kind of professional background, but also of different also economic conditions, migrants, not migrants, different kind of populations. So this is key. Mm-hmm. Healthcare is universal. Clinical trials should be universal. We are not in the business in developing tests for privileged people. We are in the business of developing tests that are answering the challenges of everybody, regardless of their gender, background, socioeconomic background, race, or ethnicity.
Well said, Thierry. With you, 100%. Love that you're thinking about it in a universal way. And I hope our insurance and everything else goes universal at some point in our lifetime as well. Next-gen sequencing is driving a path towards precision medicine and care. Please share the work and impact at QIAGEN.
So I believe that we are quite in a unique position in our company because we have taken a stance which is to be completely platform agnostic in next-generation sequencing. For many years, there was a massive player in platform development, a company in the US called Illumina, very respectable, very powerful company. You had other players, one more recently coming from China called BGI, Thermo Fisher, but you have more and more players in that field. Mm-hmm. Newer companies, PacBio, for example, Element, just to give a couple of examples. So at the point we said at QIAGEN, where is our strength? Our strength is to develop excellent quality chemistry, i.e. the kits that are going to be run on those platforms, top quality bioinformatics. And so we said, we are going to develop those two assets in a platform agnostic way. You are an Illumina user, you can use our solution. You are a Thermo Fisher, a BGI, an Element, a PacBio, you can use our solution. So the customer has the choice, and we invest where we are very strong. We are every year developing new kits in three ways. Either custom, a customer can come to us and say, I would like that specific kit. Either normal standard kit regulated, so available for life science or for clinical customers. And we are using also next generation sequencing for companion diagnostic. And this is bundled with the number one position in bioinformatics. Because, Simi, you see, the next generation sequencing revolution is unlocking the power of trillions and more of data coming from the understanding of our genome. That's very nice. But providing a clinician with trillions of data is absolutely useless. They have no time. They don't have sometimes the background even to understand what it means. So the ability to translate the meaning and the result of all the data we are getting from the genomic revolution into clinically relevant decision, into actionable clinical decision, is the power of bioinformatics. And this is where we want to continue to invest. But once again, molecular techniques are not just about NGS. PCR will continue to be relevant for many years. Digital PCR is proving to be more and more relevant. and obviously next generation sequencing. And probably tomorrow you will have also other techniques.
That brings to the next question. You know, Thierry, every day I wake up, I read the news and I feel overwhelmed. There's always a new technology, a new invention, and, you know, we're always catching up. So with the growing use of technologies and the shift to healthcare at home, biosensors are taking the lead. What are your hopes and fears about this?
You know, by DNA, I would say, Simi, I always have more hopes than fears anyway. So
that's a good DNA. But, I think we need to spread that DNA more.
But you see, you are perfectly right. And this is, you know, you remember your first question, what drove you to healthcare? It was really because also this is fascinating, the speed of innovation. I'm going to get to your question, but Simi, I mean, 6 years ago, who was talking about microbiome, for example, you see? Or, for example, in molecular techniques, how do you understand a plant and make sure that a crop is resisting to different issues, for example, for farmers? This is coming from obviously, innovation in that. And so you're talking about biosensors. I would share with you, Simi, that in my view, we always need to embrace with optimism, and at the same time, always keep a cool head. What do I mean by this? Your question is about biosensors. We believe at QIAGEN that biosensors have a very, very strong potential in healthcare. I have a very good example in mind, for example, environmental testing, food control, food safety, pharma research, clearly. And so you could see them also as a good way to get diagnostic, get healthcare even closer to every patient. And this is why, no surprise, we all know that companies like Alibaba, like Apple, obviously in the US, or Amazon are spending a significant part of their budget in healthcare. At the same time, we need to keep a cool head because you see, for example, during the COVID pandemic, many people were saying, oh, fantastic, tomorrow everybody will be able to do home testing. And testing at home is the future. I'm not saying that there is not a lot of good things with home testing, but I will always believe, Simi, that I'd rather have a clinician not far away to the patient to understand the result and to make sure what to do with that result. Let me give you a result, an example. Home testing for COVID, for example. If you are in a situation where you have to work every day because your family depends on that, and I will never criticize someone in this condition, there is no way you can afford not to go to work. You test positive at home. What are you going to do with the result? Are you going to declare that you are COVID positive? I'm not sure. I'm asking the question. Another example, you have home tests for HIV. I do not criticize that. But unfortunately, even in 2023, HIV is still bearing a very negative social stain. I find it ridiculous, but that's the way it is. So you're tested positive for HIV in your house, and there is no way we can know what the result is. What are you going to go to do with the result? Yeah, you might be very mature and accountable, or you might decide, okay, I don't want to think about it. So there will be tests that will come to the patient home. There will be constant monitoring of some of your basics, Apple Watch, for example. Mm-hmm. But you will always be better off if there is a clinician that will help you understanding the value of what you are reading. Because we are not here also to have patients freaking out because suddenly they will say, oh, what is happening? Sometimes you see, even in the diagnostics test, your result will be a bit off compared to some standard. That doesn't mean that you are sick. You might be a bit under stress. You might be a bit tired. And that's it. And so you better have always a clinician close to you. And I trust the clinician to know what to do. When I believe that tomorrow diagnostic might also evolve is that today, most of the time, you need to go to a lab to get the collection of your sample, whether it's blood, saliva, and so on. I believe that tomorrow we will have to develop easier and easier solution and efficient, obviously, to collect the sample at home. So to try to save you the visit to the lab, that might be a trend. In this one, I believe, clearly.
That's an excellent point you made, Thierry, was that I think when these home at health products or services are designed, we really have to think through the psychology behind what that member is going to do with the result. I think we design these products, in my experience in healthcare, is saying patient-centric in terms of accessibility, affordability, and ease of use. But in the aftermath, depending on the example you just shared, if someone's dependent, the family is dependent on the person, how is the person going to react? How do we make them comfortable and a sense of belonging in their results? And that's one of the key success points to actually protect public health.
Absolutely. And not to forget, Simi, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but not to forget the ethical questions related to that. The power, obviously, of those analyses of your DNA are pushing to what we call predictive diagnostic or predictive medicine. How are you going to use that if I'm trying to recruit you for QIAGEN and tomorrow I have access to some of those results because we believe or a regulator will say it should be disclosed to your potential employer and it's written that, oh, you have two or three genes that are making you susceptible to that kind of cancer, which is basically doesn't mean anything. Once again, if you do not have a clinician, but what do I do if I decide based on that, which is so not to recruit you? You see, the ethical, what do you do in case of decision on life and death? You see, it's very critical. So there is a lot of ethical. So I believe that we need to allow the science to continue to move because this is fundamental. But we need to have regulators also making sure that there is a certain control, let's call it monitoring. I do not believe in complete deregulation. That leads most of the time to disasters.
Absolutely. So I think we're really touching the main points on ethics, empathy, innovation, but really actually treating humans as just humans beyond the testing, beyond the disease. That's been a point I think we often forget, though we don't intend to. This brings us to the last question, Thierry. Three takeaways for the future of health, what would they be?
One for me, obviously, and you will say it's normal, Thierry, you work in diagnostic, I think prevention. We should never forget that first and foremost, healthcare is a right. It's not a business, it's a right. So universal healthcare, the possibility given to any person in the world, whether you live in an African country, in India, in China, or in the US or in Europe, to have access to quality healthcare, it's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer. Diagnostic cannot be just for healthy people, wealthy people, I would say. It has to be affordable everywhere in the world. Quality diagnostic. Quality diagnostic. The same kind of quality standard and performance of results.
I hope all your three wishes come true and you and I can celebrate when the day comes pretty soon. But Thierry, thank you so much for joining Health Forward. Your insights are incredible. Thank you so much again.
Thank you for listening. This is Health Forward Podcast, and I'm your host, Smriti Kirbanand.